I thought I'd just sit here for a while and actually re-record my why. Everybody sort of says, you know, oh, you've got to have your why you're doing this. You have to have your vision and your goal. But the reason I'm actually recording this right now is, what happens when you lose track of that why? What happens when life gets in the way? What happens when you have a dream and you have a vision and you have a goal? And basically, life just screws you over. And then the more it screws you over, the more you lose track of your why. So I'm just going to sit here and talk to you about this. And basically, really, I'll do a few different episodes, but I'll just talk about what's going on recently. And well, not recently, I would say, since my dream was shattered and I've been trying very hard to get back on the road, and the why I want to be a full-time traveler. So let's just start at the beginning, shall we? I have always loved to travel. I've always had those itchy feet, and the idea of exploring and finding new places has always been a thrill to me. I've always loved, you know, the ancient things and history, and just, I know it doesn't really go together, but yeah, I've just always loved that aspect. But for many, many years, I 20, 30, 40 years, I have been, doing this on my own. I raised my son mostly on my own. 90% of the time I was on my own. I did not have a partner. Didn't have much help at all from his father. So I really learned early on to be quite independent. But in saying that, I've always tried to give him a good life. I've always tried to give everything else around me happiness and light and everything. And for some reason, and I still don't know to this day, I'm just one of those people that people don't like. I know that sounds really odd to say on a podcast, but I always have found that it's very easy, you know, to be forgotten, is being left out of. I don't know why it is, but it's sort of happened all my life, and I'm not trying to be the victim here or anything like that. Like, once or twice would be a coincidence. This happens all the time in my life. So basically, I actually literally have just, throughout my life, I've just gone, you know what, you're better off being on your own. You're better off doing it on your own. You're better off trying. And that's, you know, my life in a nutshell. I've been on my own for a very, very long. I'm not dependent on anybody. But, you know, life sends you curveballs, and I've dodged quite a few of them. But a few have hit at times as well. So, yeah, everybody's life's like it. I'm not playing the victim. As I said, I am not playing the victim at all. But that's me. That's me. I'm a very empathic sort of person. I do get very emotional. I do feel fulfill people's feelings. I've tried all sorts of manners of things to try and find my way in life. I've tried different schemes, I've tried different hobbies, I've tried all different sorts of things. And one of the one things that I really did love doing is the beauty of actually teaching children, seeing the light bulb moment come on. And I love teaching. I absolutely do love that aspect of it. But then you have people that come along and it's the same old story. For some reason, they like to make your life hard. They then get a grudge. They then destroy what you were trying to do. And then that job becomes very, very hard. And in this case, my job became very hard and it accumulated with chronic pain. So I'll talk to you about that in a moment. So the chronic pain, okay. It sort of started when I hurt my shoulder. I've always worked with special needs children, and I was assisting some young students and just lifted one of them onto a framework so he could try and go across the monkey bars, and I damaged my shoulder. That, and literally my life sort of changed then. I also knew then that not so much, but I also knew that my knees weren't that great either, but I was still able to walk and talk and manage a full day at work and do what I wanted to do. I had a four-wheel drive ute. I was still able to go up to the beach and go camping on my own, which is what I used to do. And I still had an element of strength there. I still could walk a certain distance. I was not doing too bad. But when I busted my shoulder, I didn't break it. I got a really bad bursitis in here. And that was the start of it. It literally, the bursitis triggered something in my nerves and my neck. That then caused me to have quite a lot of time off of work. And because I was in physical pain, I found that I was limited on what I was can do. And like the whole vicious little circle it is, the more you're in pain and the more I tend to curl up and go, I'm in pain, I don't want to do this. The more I put on weight, the more it affected my knees. So even though I was battling with my shoulder initially, and then what happened up in my nerve damage up through my neck here, which we found out was why I kept saying or feeling that it was my shoulder, but it wasn't. It was actually a lovely physio up at Toowoomba, and he went, you know what, your shoulder and your bursitis is healing, but what's causing this was something completely different. I actually had inflamed nerves coming from down here and into my shoulder, which was causing like a frozen shoulder as well. And while all this was going on, of course, I injured my back when my son was very, very young. That's a whole nother story. And my back started to play up. My knees started to play up. And the more things hurt and started to play up, the more limited I was with what I could do. The more limited movement I could do, the more weight I put on, and the harder it was to move. So it was like this vicious little circle. And I was going to the doctors for all these different things, and it was very, very depressing. Very depressing. I'd going through all this time as well. I just lost my sister to cancer. My dad had dementia. And during this time as well, my dad passed away. So there was so many aspects to all of this. But I've always been a person that's gone, you've got to find the bright side. You've got to have a plan. My dad was a planner, so it's always, you've got to have a plan. You've got to work your way out of this one. But that sort of didn't happen. My life just got worse and worse. The pain got worse and worse. I ended up having a lot more symptoms. Like I found that I was, it really hurt if like the cat walks across me or anything like that. It was like having like a ton of bricks walk across me. And I was just so tired all the time. I was having days when I was just hurting from head to foot, and I really didn't know what was going on until I went to a rheumatologist down in Brisbane. I was under my doctor, and he was sending me down there to actually look at the osteoarthritis, which had developed in my knees. And going through her for a while and discussing things and symptoms with her, I actually found out that I wasn't going crazy, that what I was experiencing was actually something, which was lovely to hear, because at the time you're sort of going, am I going crazy? Am I going mad? Is this totally depression? Is this anxiety? What the? And I went to this lovely neurologist, not neurologist, rheumatologist, sorry. and she sort of did a few little tests on me, and she said, "You do you realize you've got fibromyalgia?" And I'm like, "Fibromyalgia?" And she goes, "Yeah, you've actually got all the symptoms of fibromyalgia." And then she sort of pressed me. She said, "Does that hurt?" And I went, "Oh, yeah, that does." And then she goes, "Does that hurt?" "Yeah, that does." "Oh, does that hurt?" "Yes, yeah, that does." And she just gently touched me all over my skin. And she said, "You've also got CPS." And I went, "What is CPS?" And she says, "Central pain sensitization." And it was two things that really answered a lot of questions. A lot of questions. So it like me how I was thinking I had chronic fatigue, which is, fatigue is part of the fibromyalgia, the sensitivities. At the time as well, I was finding that if I had any sort of test, I would react to it. And I remember having an MRI on my shoulder. I remember having this MRI up in Toowoomba on my shoulder. And while I was in the MRI machine, I could feel it going through my body. And every time they change the intensity or whatever it is that they change in an MRI machine, I felt it, and it just got worse and worse and worse. And it honestly felt like my heart was going to explode. I was almost, I don't really know how to explain it, but it just felt like something was grabbing my heart like this and just squeezing. And I was literally at the point of pressing the button going, "Get me out of here." When they said, "Oh, we're done and we're pulling you out." And I got out and I couldn't move, and I was in such a state. And to tell you, and I said to the people there, I said, "I just felt all of that." And they were just so flippant, and they said, "Oh, you don't feel MRIs. And I said, but I just felt every single thing you did to me. Like, I felt it. I felt it every time you changed the settings. I felt it in my body. And they went, no, 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 you don't feel MRIs. And I was so sick and so crook. And they weren't very helpful at all. I remember going back to the car and or the ute and not being able to drive because I just couldn't physically drive the car because this MRI had hurt me so badly. And I also remembered then too, because I was thinking, this is crazy. Like, why MRIs aren't, and you know, CT scans and all this sort of thing, aren't, you're not supposed to feel them. So, and I remember years ago, I had, they thought I had an acoustic neuroma in my ear. And I had to go for an MRI for that. And I remember going with my parents and we went to a place in Sunnybank and I went in for the MRI. And I remember walking in there, other than the pain in my ear, quite fine, perfectly colored, everything else. That MRI, they also allowed me to have earphones on, which the other one didn't for some reason, earphones on, and they played my favorite music as well, which was absolutely awesome. But I still felt it. I didn't realize that you're not supposed to feel MRIs, but I felt that one too. And I remember my parents saying that when I came out from that MRI, I was ashen gray. I looked so sick from having this MRI. I remember other times when I've had different things and I've had the fluids that go into your arms and stuff like that, you know, the color contrast and stuff. And I was sick from it. I could feel it going through my veins, but at the time I just thought it was weird and it didn't think much of it. And then again, not long after this, I also had a heart check done. And because I went to the doctors, he checked my heart. It was a regular heartbeat. So he sent me off for all these tests to get my heart checked. And because for some reason, and I can't remember why, but the doctor doing the heart test, he didn't want me to put me on the treadmill. So he suggested that I do this other procedure, which was they were going to put this stuff into me and sort of open up. It helps open up all the veins and they could see if there's any blockages or anything like that. And I was thinking, okay. And I sort of agreed to it. And yeah, well, I agreed to it and I wish I hadn't done. What happened was he said it was going to be very short. It would take, you know, so many seconds and they'd have a nurse there counting as the stuff went in. They would need so many minutes for them to do the tests and then they'd give me a reverse and I'd come out of it and all up I would be going through this for about 5 minutes maximum. And he said, look, he said, most people can't feel it. Other people actually say they have a little bit of a warm sensation. So I was like, okay, I can handle a warm sensation. Did that happen to me? No. As soon as they started putting it in, my whole body, it felt like I had daggers on the inside of my body trying to shoot outwards. It was the most painful experience other than childbirth I'd had in a long, long time. The nurse had to come in and literally hold me because it was so painful that I was crying and I was hyperventilating, and it was an awful experience, absolutely awful experience. And I thought I was dying. I really did think I was dying. I felt like I was exploding from the inside out. And it was awful. It was terrible. And again, he still had to keep going with the process. And then they did the reversal and they said, you should feel fine. And I couldn't move. They finished doing everything. I couldn't even sit up. They had to help me sit up. And then usually they have people coming and going, coming and going and coming and going. And I couldn't put one foot down on the ground. It was terrible, absolutely terrible. And the nurse just kept coming in and checking on me. And she walked me to a, after about 10, 15 minutes, she was able to walk me to a seat where I waited outside. And I had to then wait again for quite a while until I actually was able to move properly. Other people, they were saying, do you want a cup of tea? Do you want something to eat? And I thought, no, I'm going to vomit if I have that. It was just awful. But as a whole picture, SCPS. That is CPS. Now, from my research of literally and what I was told by the rheumatologist, I'm a highly sensitive person, and CPS is where inside your brain, inside your brain, you've got all these different aspects that deal with the certain aspects of your body. And CPS is when the part of your brain that deals with pain is overactive or severely overactive. And that is what CPS is. So as well as having the fibromyalgia, which actually goes through your body and gives you the fatigue and gives you the aches and the pains and the hurt, where you hurt from head to foot. I also had this CPS, which made a lot of sense. Once somebody actually went and diagnosed me with CPS, it made a lot of sense. All of these reactions to all of these things came down to this overactive part of my brain that dealt with pain. So I'm just trying to find out why my little mic here isn't actually talking to my laptop, but anyway, I'll figure that out for the next recording. So basically, once you get a diagnosis of something, once you know that it's not all in your head, because a lot of the time people were telling me everything I was thinking and feeling and everything was in my head. I had specialists telling me that. I had doctors telling me that. And there's nothing worse when you know there is something wrong, for medical people to tell you it's all in your head. So if you from this first episode, if you take anything from it, if you're not sure, keep pushing. Keep pushing until you find those answers. In the next episode, I'm going to talk a little bit about how all of these things led me down a dark path, but it also made me reevaluate my life as well. And I had to find a future. I needed to find my why am I doing this? What is my future? So if you go back to the who, what, where, when, how, and why, why being the last one. I just had to really start to analyze my life completely. My life went downhill. My house I hurt too much to do anything with it, so it deteriorated. I wasn't able to do my job properly. So anyway, we're going to talk more about that in episode two tomorrow. But heads up, and hopefully you follow me on this journey, and I'll see you in episode two.